At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a great weekend. We all had a great weekend if you are an Astros fan. And I would say we all had a great weekend if you were a fan of the starting offense for the Houston Texans on Saturday. Those were the two big things we needed this weekend. Three big things we needed. Joy, a nice drive from the first string offense, at least Saturday's first string. And I'll take two out of three from the Yankees, especially when the Sunday game is a stark reminder that we and Jose Altuve are their daddies. Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Good morning, yeah. And I'm. It's interesting when you have to clarify, hey, Saturday's starting offense, because it wasn't your starting quarterback. It was two or three of your non-starting offensive linemen. It wasn't your starting running back. And yet, the process in that first drive by the Saturday starters was just so much better than what we saw in the preseason last year, particularly on the offensive line. So I saw a lot of promising things out of the offensive line that are almost player independent, because Blake Fisher didn't play well, and yet at the same time, he didn't play well in a better manner in which he didn't play well last year. You know what it was different, Sean? I could break down and watch the film and say, oh, okay, this guy's just getting beat. Whereas last year I would watch the offensive line and say, I don't know what the hell any of these guys are doing. Your guess is as good as mine as to what they're supposed to be doing and who's at fault here and all that. I think we saw some really good things just in terms of having a crisp and concise and just a sharper offense in general. And it's one series versus a bunch of backups and a smattering of starters with the Vikings, but it's a cleaner operation right now.
Definitely a cleaner operation. Definitely an operation that looks like the coaches know what they're doing. And look, I get it. They're going against twos for the Vikings. So this is nothing that we're taking and changing the season win total on the Texans over this or anything like that. But if they're going to go out there and do something against the twos from another team, I would like my twos to go on a 10-play, 74-yard drive where it's five runs, five passes, really no negative play. The only negative play on the whole drive was Davis Mills missed a wide-open Cade Stover. It probably should have only been like an 8 or 9-play drive because they should have had a touchdown on that play. Other than that, everything looked great.
And even on that, Sean, even on that one too, there's some room because CJ had a little bit of a misfire, what looked like a misfire with Dalton Schultz in the scrimmage on Thursday. Yeah. And I think I'm not making excuses or anything. I think they are still learning this offense and some of the nuances of how they're gonna run their routes versus different looks. I think there's probably still a little bit of a disconnect there. So I'm hesitant right there to blame either Stover or Mills. Davis.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that guys are getting schemed open and sprung open.
Yeah.
And that a lot of it is because of play action and some of the things they're doing on the offensive line. That's the promising part at this stage. I think they got to refine everything. Sure.
What did D'Amico Ryans think of that first drive by the offense on Saturday? By the way, they lost the game 20-10. But honestly, that first drive was the only thing I needed on Saturday night. I'm like, offensive operation with guys that are going to be on the team this year looks good. I'll gladly sit and watch the rest of it here, but that's what I need. Here's D'Amico Ryans on that first drive.
For the game today, I was really pleased with our first offensive group, the way they stepped out, very efficient. I liked everybody just being calm and composed. Davis did an excellent job of driving the ball down the field, commanding the huddle, putting the ball in really good placement. Then to see Dare have a couple of nice runs there, playing behind his pass, and it was a really nice finish to the drive with Berrios. Like him not only catching and securing the football, but finishing physically through the end zone.
Okay, I think a couple things here that I think Texan fans need to know who haven't been at camp, and certainly we were two of just a few people who were in West Virginia. That's been Davis pretty much all camp, except for one bad practice where he threw a couple of picks. Davis Mills has looked really, really good. Granted, going against twos, but he's looked really, really good. Dare Ogunbowale is getting 15 to 20 touches a game, something's gone horribly wrong with these injuries in the running back room. And yet, it was nice to see them just to be able to plug Dare Ogunbowale in, and he gets 29 yards on 5 carries, and it wasn't like he got 21 of those 29 yards on one carry and the rest got stuffed at the line. I would say, just going back and looking, like all 5 carries had really positive things from the offensive line going there.
And there were times, too, as well as Ogunbowale played, there were times where I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, okay, what would Mixon do in this situation? Yeah. Some of those runs could have been a lot higher.
Just sure.
With a little, I mean, obviously, Mixon's a better running back than Ogunbowale.
Yeah.
But just in the quickness of some of the reads and then the explosiveness after you make the read, those Ogunbowale 5, 6, 7 yard runs really could have been 15, 20 yard runs by
yep.
Joe Mixon.
Yep.
So that was promising.
Here was D'Amico Ryans on the job the offensive line did on Saturday.
And from my point of view, our O-line did a really nice job of controlling the line of scrimmage, which when we did run the football, there was no one in the backfield. There was no penetration, and it all starts up front. So I feel like those guys did a really nice job of setting the tone. And that's what we want to see from the offensive line. You come out, be physical, set the tone for the offense, and I thought that first group did a nice job of that.
And part of that is, I think, just the type of run scheme that they're going to use last year is going to be probably a stark departure from what Bobby Sloak was doing. And without getting overly technical about it, the Texans are going to lean into double teams and plays like duo, etc., compared to as much zone blocking. And what that does, for me, I've always felt like it simplifies things for the offensive line. And remember what was tough for the Texans' offensive line last year? It was whenever defensive linemen were slanting, they would just lose track of guys. There'd be deep penetration in the backfield. There were some really good moments of slanting defensive linemen by the Minnesota Vikings where the guys just, they got washed and it helped create a bigger hole. Ursary, the rookie, did that a couple of times, handled slanting defensive ends really, really well. And that was really from the get-go last year. It was one of the biggest problems on that offensive line. So they seem to have hemmed that up a bit.
Yep.
There's a part of coaching offensive line, I guess coaching in the NFL in particular, it's always a balance of like, okay, you gotta find a way to make the high Wunderlich guys play a little dumber, and you gotta have the low Wunderlich guys play a little smarter.
Yeah.
So for the offensive linemen, bunch of analytical nerds, and they'll try to solve any algebra problem you give them. But the problem is, it's like trying to solve an algebra problem while wrestling a grizzly bear, and you gotta find that balance where you can just get them still being smart offensive linemen, but still playing aggressively and physically. And so far, just from what I saw in training camp, the last couple days of padded practices, and then in the preseason game, I think Popovich is doing a pretty good job of that. This feels like a much more caveman-like offensive line, and I like some cavemen. You know, you know, intelligent, intellectual cavemen.
Sure,
But cavemen nonetheless.
Cavemen that you know their next of kin are going to really continue that evolution to, you know, being able to speak and eat with utensils and things like
right,
that.
Right, right, yeah.
I think that's where this O-line is. Advanced cavemen, yes.
Open a door in your Flintstones vehicle right. for your girlfriend instead of maybe, you know, the way they used to be portrayed in cartoons.
Right, right.
Instead of flashback to the stuff that, wow.
Little, yeah, these were very misogynistic cartoons, and I enjoyed these, yes.
Cartoons really did a number on our generation.
They did. We're coming out of it now. Okay, I know this is what I know people want to hear from you because I think they saw the reaction on social media to it. I think they saw it with their own eyes. You had a really good YouTube about the offensive line in general in that first drive if you want to go find it on Seth's YouTube channel. But I think people are very curious what your thoughts were on the debut of Arianti Urcery.
I think he's got the potential to be really, really good. And some of that was in the run game where I said there were a couple times where the defensive end slanted inside and Urcery had to redirect and handled it really, really well. That was notable because that was one of the knocks against him in college was that sometimes he didn't redirect well when guys slanted to the inside. And he's got those long arms and he uses them really well. When I talked to Danielle Hunter last week, that was one of the points he made about him is that he's a technique guy. Mm-hmm. And that might sound like a simple thing, but some offensive linemen, especially bigger dudes, they've gotten away in college with just kind of bullying people, and they're not as focused in on their technique. Ursary's really honed in on his technique by rookie standards.
Do you have a gut feel on what you would if you were D'Amico Ryans, what you would trot out there as the first set of tackles in week one against the Rams?
I mean, with Cam Robinson, I just don't know.
The Robinson injury is a huge fly in the ointment. I get that. Yeah.
And Ed Ingram played well at right guard.
He did.
Juice Scruggs did some good things at left guard. So this all affects, you know, how you're going to play the offensive tackles, obviously, because of Titus Howard. So Ed Ingram played well at right guard. It's against backups. He's been a starter before. Maybe in this scheme, it's just the right fit for him. If they like Ed Ingram, then I like moving Titus Howard out and keeping him out there at right tackles because Blake Fisher is not the guy.
Right.
If they don't feel comfortable with any of the guys who are competing at right guard right now, then I think you got to put Titus Howard at right guard and then Urcery at right tackle and Cam Robinson at left tackle.
Yeah.
So it's almost just who do you like at right guard and do you feel comfortable with him that you can keep Titus Howard out at right tackle.
Yeah, well, and now Juice Scruggs has found his way back into the mix. Now, granted, he was at left guard because they gave Lakin Tomlinson. They gave two offensive line vets the night off on Saturday, Titus Howard and Lakin Tomlinson. Juice Scruggs obviously fits into this puzzle better for his sake than he did 2 weeks ago when he was running with the threes.
Scruggs did some good things against defensive linemen. He was not good when he got up to the second level. He really had a hard time staying attached to blocks, and that's a big question for me. Blake Fisher had the worst outing of all those guys that started the game. Juice Scruggs did some good things, but I still don't feel measurably better about him as a guard than I did at the end of last year.
What about Andrews, real quick, before we go to break here?
Andrews I thought was fine, and I don't know if he did anything to, you know, win the competition or anything. But for what they want to do in terms of just being physical at the point of attack, I think he's still ahead of Jarrett Patterson. Mm-hmm. I think both those guys have some big question marks when it comes to pass protection. But Andrews is just a stouter, more physical dude. I've told you, when I look at if I were a nose tackle just playing against the run, and I had to choose, hey, which guy do you think you're going to have a better game against? I think I'd have a better game against Jarrett Patterson right now than Jake Andrews.
That makes sense. All right, off and running on a Monday, Reaction Monday. It's a Reaction Monday. We had Texans football on Saturday. Hey, we had Astros baseball over the weekend, too. I would say a good weekend for the Astros. Tonight is going to be electric. Tonight's going to be one of the more electric regular season games, especially in the month of August, that we've had in the last several years. Homecomings galore and a return to the mound for what's been a pretty successful rehab from a Tommy John surgery. Big night out at the yard. We'll recap the weekend. The good news and the bad news for the Houston Astros, and we'll do that coming up next. All right, Astros are in a dogfight now in the division. We'll talk about that in just a second as we welcome you back in on a Monday here on Sports Radio 610. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne. The Astros are one up in the loss column, a half game up in the standing. So as of right now, it's a dogfight. The good news, it's the Mariners they're dogfighting with. The Mariners will find a way to mess it up, I'm pretty sure. But Seth, I loved yesterday's win. We'll get to the good news and the bad news as to where the Astros are right now. And tonight is going to be incredible out at the ballpark with everything going, with all the returns, like three huge returns tonight at the ballpark. I loved that game yesterday because the Yankees got a taste of sort of everything that the Astros have kind of been about this year, which was they got the, we got home runs from Correa and Altuve. So they got treated, you know, they got old school weighed by the Astros. You know, they're used to that, Correa and Altuve doing those things. You had a huge clutch hit from Cam Smith, who the Yankees have had yet to deal with until this weekend. But his hit that he got with the bases loaded against an elite level pitcher in Max Fried in the fourth inning, Astros up 2-0, and he was down 0-2 quick in that at-bat, worked it back to 3-2, had a really, really gutsy take on 2-2. I mean, gutsy as hell. Got it to 3-2, and then laced one down the line for a two-run double. I thought that was the biggest hit of the game because that gave Jason Alexander, who again is also part of this story the Yankees got a dose of, which is, yeah, the Astros are taking these nobodies and turning them into serviceable. In the case of Jason Alexander, the last two starts, very good major league pitchers. He had a no-hitter through three or four innings yesterday.
So I think it was through six it ended up being.
He got, yeah. They got a hit against – oh, yeah, it was five. It was through five. That's right. They got a hit in the sixth. That's right, because I was going – because I was half paying attention because I was doing some Texan stuff. And I'm going – when they got the first hit in the sixth inning, the Yankees, and that's the first hit for the Yankees, I'm like, will you guys please mention the no-hitter at least? Like, so I would pay closer attention to the game if I knew there was a no-hitter. I was kind of half-watching the game. But between yesterday, between the home run and the way Correa has been since they acquired him, we'll talk about that. He'll get acknowledged for that at 7:20. But the home runs from Altuve and Correa, the big hit from Cam Smith, the start from Jason Alexander, and the fact that they did it against one of the Yankee aces in Max Fried, it was just a ball of joy yesterday.
I would say the walk, the game tying walk by Christian Walker as well. Like there was
two nights. You're talking about
that was 2 days ago.
That was Saturday.
Yep. Go ahead.
That was Saturday.
Everything's
all
jumbled up in my brain. I'll sort it out by the time the show.
It's no worries. Yeah, but I'm just strictly yesterday. I just like the series of things that led to a 7-1 win to me. I'm like, these are the. If a Yankee fan were to ask me, how are the Astros in this spot right now? You know, how are they a half game up when they've had all these injuries? How are they in first place in the division? I almost feel like that game yesterday, just hand them a checklist of all the things that went on yesterday. Like, here's why. All these things right here, you know? So it was good, man. It's a good weekend. 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. Me like.
It was the Altuve. You know, Yankees fans are convinced that Altuve is plays out of his brain when he plays against them. The funny thing is that he's about his performance against the Yankees have been pretty much his average performance across his entire career.
Yeah.
The difference is the home runs, I think.
Yeah.
He's got the most home runs against the Yankees of any non-divisional opponent.
Yeah.
And the fact that so many of them have come in big-time games. Or the when I said this, I said I tweeted this yesterday, I can't get mad at the Yankees because they've bent over backwards to send Altuve to the Hall of Fame.
They have. They've done their part, yes.
It's overall, sure, he's been about his normal self versus the Yankees. But whenever you're playing the Yankees, it's a higher profile game, which helps in the Hall of Fame emotional bank of anybody who might be voting. They just remember those moments. And two, it's just the way in which he does it. He hits home runs versus the Yankees.
He's hit 15. Does it not feel like more than 15 to you? I mean, he's been in the league. He's been in baseball for 15 years now.
I think so, just because it's been poignant. They've been poignant moments that it feels like more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're right, because they're either in big spots or in the case of this weekend, they're in early at-bats. You know, his first at-bat, and it gives them twice. In the two wins, he hit home runs in the first inning of these games. So that was cool to see. Boy, tonight is going to be something else, huh? Of the three returns to Daikin Park, power rank them, Seth. Alex Bregman's return to Daikin Park for the first time since, you know, leaving the Astros in free agency. Carlos Correa's homecoming return to Daikin Park. Or the one that honestly excites me the most because it matters for baseball purposes the most is Christian Javier's return to the mound tonight from Tommy John surgery.
Oh, I think the Correa is the one that probably excites me the most, just from an emotional standpoint. It helps that he's been so good since he came back.
1,100 OPS.
What's his OPS?
It's nearly 1,100. Yeah,
that's pretty good, Sean.
That's good. Last I checked, that's
and that was
number.
After a little bit of a slow start too.
Yes.
So
yes.
You factor that into it, and he's been even better since after that first
that's
game.
Six straight multi-hit games. I mean, he has been elite since he got back here.
I think Correa is going to be the fun one. Bregman, it'll be kind of cool, but also just given how the last series went versus the Red Sox, I don't need to see any reminders of how awesome Bregman is as a baseball player.
I agree with that. What about Javier? You excited?
Javier, I'm just more nervous than anything.
Okay.
He hasn't. Look, you don't read too much into rehab starts, but his invisible doesn't look to be at peak effectiveness right now. I know his velocity has been there since, but that's his velocity has never really been the thing.
No.
It's that he's got a 94 mile per hour fastball that looks to the batter like it's a 98 or 99 mile per hour fastball because of the spin rate. And he hasn't been making them miss his fastball as much as he does when he's at his peak.
His velocity has never been the thing in terms of he's a guy who relies on 98 mile an hour heat like some guys do. But the last 2 years, as it turns out, there was something going on with his arm. That 94 that you're talking about turned into 92 and 91.
Yeah.
He needs to be at a certain velocity, but you're absolutely right. He's not a guy that blows you away. He's a guy that does it with some witchcraft. I'm excited about that. Look, knock on wood, like his is the only rehab that has gone, like if you hand somebody a textbook for here's what you want Tommy John rehab to look like. He got the surgery late May in 2024, and here he is in, you know, still relatively early August, a year late. I mean, that's less than 15 months.
Let me ask you, I'm going to have you power rank these three guys in a matter of how much your sphincter is tightened.
Okay.
So on the sphincter tightening meter, you've got three guys that just jump into my brain. Yeah. Javier, just because he's coming back, et cetera, et cetera. He has had a smooth rehab by Astros standards, especially.
Yes.
I mean, it's been, 15 months or so since his injury?
Yeah, May 24th, 2024 was when he got the surgery. Yep.
Okay, so 14, 15 months since his surgery, and it's been relatively smooth. So I like that. But you got Javier.
Okay.
You've got Arrighetti.
Yep.
Had some bad luck, but also, you know, wasn't locating his pitches perfectly.
And going back and looking at the box score the next day and just listening and having watched the game, you know, like all those things, it was the strangest game. Like it was 3 2/3 innings. He did give up a home run, so that's not good. 11 hits where half of them are infield hits is a weird thing. So, okay, so Arrighetti, who's the third one?
Fromber.
Okay. Now that's a good one. Now they lose on Saturday. Fromber, they've lost three straight Fromber starts now. After winning 13 in a row. Okay, power rank my sphincter tightening on all these. I'm going to put Javier at number one just because we have no idea what it's going to be. Arrighetti, I think, is going to be fine. His injury was a broken hand. I don't think that's something that's going to crop up again. Like, I think he's physically, he just needs to pitch in major league games. I think he's going to be okay. Javier's number one because of the unknown. Framber is, you know what? Arrighetti's number two just because he ain't Framber. Framber's going to be fine. They've lost three straight starts of his. The first one, he pitched amazing. They just couldn't hit. And so he had that one bad inning against the Red Sox that was super weird. But other than that one bad, you know, he's balking. They had all these errors and mental errors. It was one bad inning. The most recent one, he was not good on Saturday. Like, he was just flat out not good on Saturday.
And his curveball was the one that – his curveball had been, until three games ago, it was – or actually going into that game, it was the best of his career in terms of his whiff rate on curveballs. And then he couldn't make people miss his curveball on Saturday. So it's more of a – Even though he hasn't been himself for a few games, it's just that I trust that he's going to figure that out, whatever's causing that.
Framber, I'll tell you what, Seth, with Framber, I'll tell you what I gain an appreciation of is how amazing he was in 2022 when he had the 25 straight quality starts.
Yeah.
Like, you look now, and Framber is still a quality start machine. He leads the league in quality starts, and he's had 16 of them. But he's, since that year in 2022 where he was good pretty much every start, he's had these fits and starts in the regular season in 23 and 24, and he's always eventually figured it out. That's why he's at the bottom of my power rankings.
You don't worry that it's a fatigue issue.
No, if
it were a younger pitcher or somebody else, I might worry, you're getting down towards the end of the season. So I don't worry about it being fatigue.
No.
I do worry a little bit. And this was something that remember when they instituted the pitch clock? Fromber was one of the guys we were most nervous about because he needed time to collect himself.
Yeah.
And part of him becoming a steady pitcher had been taking the little stroll around the back of the mound and everything.
Yep.
So we wondered how that was going to affect him. He does currently lead the league in pitch clock violations.
Yeah, he took the lead on Saturday. He had a big one on Saturday to Judge.
Oh, your full yeah. His full count, right? Yeah.
Yes, and he walked in with it.
So,
yeah.
That's the part that I worry. I hope he's still with the same sports psychologist and everything, and all that can maybe work out. It's weird. It's scary, but I also know that he can overcome some of these mental hurdles at times. It's just a matter of addressing it. So I trust that he'll be all right. Yeah, he'd be third on my sphinctometer.
Yeah, yeah. For me to put him worry about Fromber ahead of concern over a Tommy John return and Spencer Arrighetti would be disrespectful to Fromber. So I like power ranking that, though, because you're right. I mean, there are these issues right now. And, you know, I mean, like even Hunter – you know, Hunter he's been better than he was those couple of bad starts he had, but he still only went 5 1/3 on Friday, you know?
Well, and I've been the one all season long saying, nah, pitching, don't worry about it. Your trade deadline moves are these guys coming back from the IL.
Here we are.
And then Arrighetti, come on, Arrighetti. I've kind of built a platform here. Now, Javier has had a smooth recovery. He, as opposed to, say, Luis Garcia hasn't pitched a baseball in a game that matters in a long time.
No, but he was awesome this weekend in his rehab start. He four shutout innings with 7 Ks in his rehab start.
So I guess those three guys, Javier, Arrighetti, and Garcia, are the guys that I have the most personal reputation to gain or lose just based on me trying to act like it was no big deal that you didn't get a pitcher at the trade deadline.
Is Lance just off the grid now? Is he like he had a blister? He should be back pretty soon, right?
Lance is, you know, we talked about this last week about Lance is becoming one of those guys that just has weird injuries all the time, and sometimes it's major, and then there's a hiccup in the recovery.
He's the Terrence Jones of the Astros.
I took a Google stroll through his injury history, and I'd completely forgotten the time he got injured by a champagne cork. That was so now
his
we've
elbow,
got
yeah.
for weird injuries. We had the time he got hit by a champagne cork in the playoffs, and then there was also obviously it wasn't like out at dinner on a Friday night. We were at Nobu in LA.
Yeah.
And the other was the freak weight room accident where he tripped over or dropped what was the weight room? Did somebody drop a weight on his foot?
No, because it wasn't a blunt force thing. It's like he pulled a muscle above his toe or
like
something.
Tripped
like
over something.
Yeah. You're right. He is the weird injury guy. So but Javier tonight and and I think we get a Hunter Brown sighting in this series. It's Hunter and Spencer Arrighetti. I'm not sure in which order. I think it's Arrighetti, then Hunter in this series. So three against the Red Sox. And they're all big games now. You got a half game lead in the division. How nervous are you right now about the Mariners nipping at their heels, Seth?
Oh, it's the Mariners. That's right. Yeah, I try not to think about the fact that the Mariners just continually blow it as the season winds down. Because every team is different every year.
Sure.
I'd put that, I don't know, I'm on a 5 out of 10 right now. I don't feel awesome about the Astros right this moment with all of the question marks that we just addressed.
Yep.
I'm actually honestly when I saw that they have 47 games remaining, which just crept up on me quick.
Mm-hmm.
That wow, this thing is coming down to the wire. 47 baseball games is not a lot of baseball games, and I'm embracing it.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it's nervousness or excitement, but I like that there's a little bit of a crunch in the division right now.
Yep. All right, we have some injury updates for the Astros. We'll get to those in headlines. We'll circle back to the Texans as well. Biggest takeaway from Saturday night's game against the Minnesota Vikings. We've got a little Rockets news as well for the schedule that we'll get to, and some NFL. We got a lot to get to, man. And we're here till it's Monday, so we're here till 8 a.m. Texans All Access, or Texans Training Camp Live, I should say. I don't know if it's All Access or Training Camp Live. You're going to get Mark Vandermeer and John Harris from 8 to 10 on Mondays, and then off to the races. In the loop after that, the drive in Area 45 here on Sports Radio 610. Headlines are next. Stay there. This is Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, today's headlines. Let's start with the Texans on Saturday. They lose to the Vikings 20-10, but there were some good things that happened in the game. I will gladly trade a loss in a preseason game for how the offense looked in the first quarter of that game. D'Amico Ryan said overall, over the past week or so, we know the Texans haven't been in Houston. They're back on the practice field today in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. D'Amico Ryan said he is proud of how his guys traveled as a team and became better as a team with their trip to West Virginia last week.
Yeah, I'm really proud of our guys, like being on the road for a week, really proud how everyone handled it. Thankful to our staff for making this such a seamless transition. Like, we have a ton of great people who work for us, help us out, help the players be able to perform at their best. Thought we did a nice job this week of bonding, being at the Greenbrier. And we grew closer as a unit. We got better as a football team. Now this next week, I'm looking for us to take that next step. Like, can we continue to improve, continue to grow? We'll have Carolina coming in. We'll have a joint practice next week. So excited, again, to go against someone else in practice and see how that week turns out.
All right, so that was D'Amico on kind of the week as a whole, which included the Minnesota game. To me, Seth, the biggest takeaway from this game, the offensive drive that really mattered for this team. And again, even that drive had a lot of guys who aren't going to factor into the season. But I think just in the way that the operation looked, and there were a few guys out there that are going to factor into this season, at least early on, looked really good. 10-play, 74-yard drive for a touchdown.
Yeah, the offensive line in particular, I think, just looked cleaner across the board. Ariante Ursery was a big headline item there. He's your second-round pick. You traded up to get him. He looks the part. He's 6'6", 335 pounds, but he uses that length and size really well. And it was both as a pass protector, which I've seen. You know, he's struggled at times versus two really good defensive ends in practice, but he's also had some good reps against Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. And in the game the other night, I thought the biggest thing for the offensive line was they sorted things out in the run game really well. They had a good feel for what their assignments were, how to react and respond to blitzes and slanting defensive linemen. It just looked cleaner across the board. Blake Fisher is at the other end of the spectrum and on the other side of the line at right tackle. He had a rough go of it, and he stayed in after a lot. I mean, Ariante Ursery, the rookie, played 10 snaps, and then he was done. They kept Blake Fisher in there. And
he was in late in the third quarter, which is not good news if you're somebody who's looking to crack the one deep on a team. You know?
And two guys on defense, E.J. Speed caught a lot of people's attention. Yeah. He made a couple of big-time third down plays in a row, had another, it made at least three notable plays in that game.
Yeah.
The other guy that I was intrigued by was Darrell Taylor, who, like E.J. Speed, is on a one-year, $4 to $5 million contract where it's kind of a prove-it deal. I think E.J. Speed showed up. In the run game, Darrell Taylor played a lot better than I think. That's been one of his downsides. He's a smaller guy, and he hasn't always been very good against the run. He did some really nice things against the run, even that didn't necessarily result in tackles, but I was watching him specifically for that. So I think the playing in this defense with this coaching staff might pay dividends for the team, obviously, but then he's on a prove-it deal. Maybe he's another one of these guys that gets a deal elsewhere, gets extended.
Yeah, we'll get to some of the individual winners and losers at the top of the hour from that game. We'll acknowledge people at 720 across all sports platforms. Here's one real quick from D'Amico Ryans. Seth mentions the offensive line. Here's D'Amico on the offensive line.
And from my point of view, our O-line did a really nice job of controlling the line of scrimmage, which when we did run the football, there was no one in the backfield. There was no penetration, and it all starts up front. So I feel like those guys did a really nice job of setting the tone, and that's what we want to see from the offensive line. You come out, be physical, set the tone for the offense, and I thought that first group did a nice job of that.
And that Vikings defense led by Brian Flores, they do some really funky things in the regular season. There wasn't as much funkiness out of them, but they did disguise. They did blitz. And some of the blitzes were kind of, there were a couple of plays where I didn't even realize it was a blitz while I was watching on TV when I went back and watched. Because I've been trained that if there's any kind of a blitz at all, somebody's going to screw it up on the Texans offensive line. And they didn't. They by and large, there were individual breakdowns here and there. But as a group, I think they did a pretty good job. They did a much better job than last year during the preseason.
Yep.
I'm not trying to predict what kind of an offensive line they'll be or anything right this moment. But compared to last year's preseason, they just did a much better job of handling any kind of misdirection or disguises. The running backs in pass protection were really good, and that's a big deal. Go back to the fourth quarter of the Kansas City game, and the running backs were not spectacular in pass protection. So when I see guys like Jawar Jordan chopping dudes
and
down.
And Woody Marks, two young players, were really good in pass pro in that game.
Yeah,
on Saturday.
I got excited about that.
Me too. Same thing. I'm going, holy cow, look at that blitz pickup. That is that looked really, really good. It was funny. We're talking about the O-line. We'll get to the Astros here, I promise. I was on Channel 2 last night with Randy McAvoy and Aaron Wilson, and we did a stock up, stock down segment by position, and one of the positions we did was offensive line. And I'm like, well, it's stock up because the stock was a penny stock coming into the season. Yeah, I'm still super concerned about it, but it is definitely stock up compared to last year.
I saw somebody last night tried to get a bunch of people with a gotcha take because there were a lot of tweets from a week ago about how poorly the offensive line was playing in a particular practice or something. And then they pointed to me saying something about the Texans offensive line after the preseason game. No, there's no gotcha there. Like saying, because I said something positive about the offense.
Right.
There's no gotcha. The offense was rough the first couple weeks. They were like, when something is going poorly and then later they show improvement, it doesn't all of a sudden negate any of the poor play from earlier in the preseason.
Right.
The offensive line, I think, has made some actual improvements over the course of 3 weeks.
Yep. Astros take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees over the weekend, including a 7-1 win yesterday. Jason Alexander, probably the biggest story in that game, through 6 shutout innings. He was excellent in that game. He's had 2 really good starts back-to-back now. All of a sudden now, Christian Javier returns tonight against the Red Sox at homecoming night. Carlos Correa, first game back. Alex Bregman, his first game back in an opposing uniform. The Astros are a half game up on Seattle, so we're in the middle of a dogfight right now in the AL West. This is fun, man. I mean, these, you know, what did you say, 47 games left, Seth? Is that what you said in the last segment?
Thereabouts,
yeah,
yes.
Somewhere about around there. I mean, yeah, this is – and the Astros have been here the last couple years. This is what the division has been. It's not been the – these are not your 2021 and 22 Astros, or certainly not the 2019 Astros, that are just running away and hiding with the division. This is what it's going to be like for the next few years. You're going to be in it. But so are other teams going to be in it.
I mean, there's so many things. There's some things you can 100% rely on, and it's the defense in general has been very good. The pitching, we knew it. You know, when they were on that hellacious tear, even with despite the injuries, the pitching wasn't going to be sustainable long term. You knew at some point you're going to have to rely on these guys coming back from injury, and it's for me so much of how far they can go is going to be Arrigetti, Javier, Luis Garcia, and I don't know what to do with Brian King. I don't know.
He was good last night. Yesterday, yeah, he came in, struck out the side in the ninth inning.
I know. We'll see.
Don't make me stick up for Brian King because I didn't realize
he was good last night. Oh, yeah. Great. Do pitchers only pitch once a year?
No, I didn't realize that
was a new development.
He's been bad of late. I get that.
If you have a starting pitcher pitch 7 innings in a game, is it okay for him to have 6 awful innings and 1 good one?
Yeah.
No, I don't think you don't go back and say, one inning, he was really good.
Ask Fromber. He did that against the Red Sox. He had 1 bad inning. All right. Last thing, Rockets. They will be playing on Christmas Day for the first time since 2019. This is what happens when you become relevant again. They're going to be playing at the Lakers on Christmas Day. So a little Luka and LeBron against KD and the merry band of support of Durantettes on the Rockets. They'll be 1 of 5 games being played on Christmas Day. So if you're looking for measures of relevance and how the league feels about the Rockets as a marquee team, right there smack dab in the middle of the Christmas Day lineup. They'll be competing with this NFL schedule because we know the NFL is now trying to usurp Christmas from the NBA. Lions at Vikings. Really good game. Those two teams won 29 games combined last year in the regular season. Cowboys at Commanders. Commanders are good. Cowboys are, I guess, box office for whatever reason. And then Broncos at Chiefs, who I think are probably, you know, the Chargers are in there too, but maybe the two best teams in the AFC West. So it's a pretty stout NFL schedule for a Christmas Day. So a lot of sports, man. It's going to be a fun day on Christmas Day. Watch
Ryan that. King in his last six innings is a 7.5 ERA.
Yeah, I know he sucks.
He doesn't suck, though. No, because he was very good. I used to be much higher on the Brian King-o-meter than you were. Yeah, my confidence has been shaken with some of these home runs.
Well, he's giving up home runs. That's the problem. Yeah. It's all these bombs he's given up in big spots. Yeah, he lost the game for him on Saturday. So there you go. Those are your headlines. We didn't get to the NFL headlines. We'll try to mix those in the 7 o'clock hour. Shedeur Sanders was a big story this weekend, had a real nice start. Travis Hunter got his first action, so maybe we'll take a look at the two former Colorado Buffaloes at some point in the 7 o'clock hour. Three winners, three losers from the Saturday game against the Minnesota Vikings. Individual, and a couple of these names we've mentioned already, but it's worth mentioning them again. And we'll acknowledge, a lot of Astros in Acknowledge Me, a little bit of NFL and some little pop culture as well. We'll get to that in the 7 o'clock hour. Stay there.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
On Saturday, we play the Vikings. What I want to see is our guys just go out and see who can go play when the lights are on. Like, guys do it sometimes in practice and the lights come on. Sometimes you see guys show up even better in the game, and some guys don't show up as well. So I just want to see who shows up when it's game time. I've seen them practice now for several weeks, and I'm pretty sure I know what guys are capable of doing, but sometimes you always have those guys who surprise you in preseason game, and that's the exciting part about preseason, seeing those young guys right shine bright when they get their moment. So I'm looking for guys to go out and have fun, execute, but most importantly, like, just play for each other and finish the game the right way.
All right, so there you go. I don't know if they finished the game the right way. I would say of all the things D'Amico said, that was D'Amico Ryans from Thursday, if you're wondering the future tense that he's talking about the preseason game with. I played that because I wanted to reestablish what he was looking for in that Vikings game and then see which guys here, Seth, lived up to what D'Amico was looking for, which is, hey, when the lights go on, who are the guys that perform really well? So we'll do some winners and losers here. They didn't finish the game very well. That'll play into losers. The fourth quarter was not great. Sorry, Graham Mertz. This is what comes with being an NFL football player.
I think having six guys out of the game on the defensive line played into some of that as well, because even some of the guys that were starting in this game might have been playing in the third or fourth quarter of regulars of a normal preseason game.
Yep.
There were some guys out there that just weren't giving a classic Texans defensive line production.
I would say that's accurate. Yes. So let's do winners and losers from Saturday. You know, who are the guys that, just as D'Amico described, when the lights went on, they played really well. And a lot of these guys are battling for spots on this roster. Braxton Berrios is one of them. He's winner number one. He was the only guy for the Texans to get into the end zone. Here's what it sounded like.
First down at the 14. Mills boots out to the left. Mills looking, throwing. Got a man across the 10. And to the pylon. And touchdown. Braxton Berrios, catch and run for six. What a way to cap the drive.
That was nice, man. That was a, you know, little play action to the right side, boot back to the left, and Braxton Berrios putting his head down and going for the pylon.
There's an element there, too, of because the Texans' offensive line was playing physically on that drive, they made it look like run. The outside linebacker got duped. That poor bastard. And he was just stuck out in space watching Braxton Berrios run by. And that physical play to get into the end zone was really impressive. I think two guys on that drive, guys who are smaller but showed that they're very swarm-like, are Jalen Noel, who could have easily been wrapped up because Blake Fisher missed the block, could have been wrapped up for a 2 or 3 yard gain,
yep,
broke that tackle, yeah, and got a first down, and then Braxton Berrios getting into the end zone. That was impressed by two smaller guys making some physical plays on that drive.
Yeah, really, really good. Three catches, 33 yards, and a touchdown for Braxton Berrios, who was our guest on the postgame show. He joined us on the postgame show, myself and Clint Sterner, and Clint asked him about Nick Caley and how he's fitting in the offense. We should point out, and I think Braxton points this out, he and Caley have a history. Braxton Berrios was actually drafted by the Patriots back in, I think, 2021, when Caley was an assistant on the staff there.
Oh, I mean, I first of all, he's a great coach that everybody wants to play for. We met each other my rookie year out in New England, where he was the tight ends coach, and so I've known him really my whole career. And you know, he's very, very highly intelligent. He knows what he wants, and you know, his system, he's easy to communicate with, and he makes learning it very easy. I mean, he's been awesome as an OC, and you know, everybody is really rallying around him. And you know, you kind of saw again with that first drive, you know, what, you know, the very tip of what he's capable of. And so it's going to be a fun year.
Braxton Berrios, if you looked at Braxton Berrios just after that preseason game alone, and you asked, "Hey, which team originally drafted him?" drafted him. You'd be like, "Oh yeah, that dude,
small white
wide receiver." That's a Bill Belichick special,
yeah,
right there. Yeah. I did like. I try not to be swayed too much by this, but I do love seeing veteran players play with a huge amount of enthusiasm in the preseason,
yeah,
because you can tell a little bit about the professionalism of a guy where how much they really get into a preseason game. And Berrios, he's a guy who's fighting for a roster spot, mm-hmm, because this wide receivers room is just so deep right now and competitive. And you've got top three round rookies in the room makes it really tough, especially when they're looking really good so far during, mm-hmm, training camp. But he just went out there and he was playing like he was a rookie trying to make the squad. And I liked seeing that.
It's good to see. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Braxton Berrios.
Braxton has done it a long time in this league. He finds a way to get open. He made a lot of nice catches for us today. You know, also in the return game, he's very experienced, and you see that experience shows up in game time. So excited to see him continue to grow. And he started off really hot, so excited to see where he transcends.
Yeah, Braxton. And Mechie had a good game, too. Mechie had five. He was our leading receiver in this game.
He did, yeah. Yeah, Mechie. And Mechie is a guy that you start to wonder. We had these conversations last year, but there might be some kind of a trade at the end of training camp if Mechie doesn't make the team. I think he's shown enough that there's other teams out there that are probably intrigued by Mechie.
Him being in the fourth quarter felt like a showcasing thing to me. Maybe, yeah, I'm reading too much into it. Maybe he's also battling for a roster spot, which is what guys in the fourth quarter of a preseason game are in, mm-hmm, for as well. But that's how I'm viewing Mechie now, Seth, is I'm viewing him as a with every catch that he gets in the preseason, I'm hoping that, okay, maybe it's not a sixth rounder for Mechie. Maybe it's a fifth rounder for Mechie right. that they get. That
That's
kind of
the
thing.
Other weird reply I get on social media that always confuses me. I'll say, hey, they might trade Mechie. And somebody will be like, well, it's not like you're going to get a first round pick for him.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's other things you can trade.
I need you to bring me in. When you see these people, come get me.
Yeah, come get you, because I try not to mix
you
it
don't
up
wanna,
anymore.
Yeah,
I hold back. I'm like, I don't need to get into arguments on Twitter that
come
end up taking
me.
45 minutes of my day. I'll waste 45 minutes of your time.
That's fine. I can take time away from telling Minnesota how ratchet their baseball team is for giving us Carlos Correa. Yeah.
One big loser from the preseason game, though, by the way, is the play-by-play announcer for the Vikings. When you go and watch on NFL.com, you have to watch the Vikings TV copy.
Yeah.
And I don't know who he was, but I don't – like, Braxton Berrios isn't a huge name, but I feel like he's a name enough that the announcer shouldn't be calling him Braxton Berrios the whole time.
Right. Miami.
I don't expect you to know his career stats or anything necessarily, but it's a pretty notable name. It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
A play-by-play announcer especially should know that it might be more fun to say it, Barrios, but it's Berrios.
It's Berrios.
My God.
Yep. All right, winner number two. One was Braxton Berrios. Winner number two, you mentioned him in the previous segment, Seth, E.J. Speed. Here was one highlight from E.J. Speed, a little TFL action.
Second and two from the Houston 40. McCarthy, offset eye, stands up, taps the helmet. McCarthy boots out to the right, quick throw. He's got Ham, the fullback, but he's ripped down for a loss. Good stop there for the Houston Texans by E.J. Speed, the former Colt. So they lose yardage on the play, and it's going to create a third and about four.
E.J. Speed was not just making play. Like, he had big energy, man. He had a pass breakup. Couple of tackles. He had that TFL you just heard. I think he had another one that was a big hit there. That I think it was a
big hit. Yeah, he had a big hit.
Yeah.
In the second drive.
Yeah.
And the big thing was he did a good job. With E.J. Speed, he's always come up and made really nice plays in the run game. It's in pass coverage. He hasn't been as good. I thought he didn't have any huge challenges, but he sorted everything out really well. He was able to make that play because he read that play that he just made. He was able to see that J.J. McCarthy, the rookie, well, basically a rookie quarterback, did not execute the fake well at all. So E.J. Speed was on it. E.J. could tell that it wasn't run immediately when it was out on the running back. He did. It's not just his athleticism. You know, we're watching to see, okay, does he really start to sort things out on the coverage side of things? Because he has the physical ability to be really good in coverage.
Yep, he was really good. But if you buy into PFF scores, which I semi-buy into them, he was their best player. He had their best grade, 92.1. He was the best player for the Texans, according to that metric. Davis Mills, winner number three. Here was Davis Mills after the game. Davis Mills, of course, led the team on a 10-play drive to open the Texans' offense. The Vikings got the ball first in this game. And the Texans, down 3-0, drove down, got a touchdown on a 10-play drive that was led by Davis Mills, who went 4-for-5 on that drive. Here was Davis after the game saying, I had a lot of fun out there.
It was a lot of fun out there. Can't really replicate live action in practice. We do as much as we can, scrimmage and move the ball periods in practice, but it's a lot of fun getting back out there with your teammates, going against some guys you don't see every day. So I thought, obviously only had that one drive at the start, but I thought the offensive line did a great job in protection, and especially in the run game, ran the ball hard, and my guys were getting open out on the edge, and I was able to deliver it.
Davis had a good camp. He's had a good camp.
He's had a good camp. The ball was coming out really quick. That was one other notable thing where you try not to read into it too much. It's just a preseason game, but it does seem like the two big points of emphasis just based on that game and some of the things I've seen in camp are, hey, we got to get the ball out quickly. You can set up the deep ball with the run, but you can also set up the deep ball with a quick game and making those linebackers and safeties be honest. And I thought Davis did a really good job getting the ball out quickly. And then seeing the field, including on that misfire to Cade Stover. And at this point, that might have been as simple as Cade Stover needed to extend that route a little bit more. Yeah, who knows? We saw something similar happen with C.J. Stroud and Dalton Schultz in the scrimmage last Thursday. But so whether that was Davis or on Cade Stover, the plan worked. Mm-hmm. Like they were springing guys open with the scheme, which was good to see. And it's just preseason, take it with a grain of salt. But compared to last year's preseason, it's night and day. The execution is just so much better across the board in all those position groups.
Yep. So those are the winners. Before we get to losers, couple texts, as long as we're talking about these guys. Text message, am I the only person that wasn't surprised by EJ Speed? I thought he was supposed to be pretty good. Here's the thing. You know who's probably surprised by EJ Speed? The other 31 teams in the NFL that didn't give him a contract as a free agent. He's on a one-year maximum $5 million deal. Like, he's, you know, he played a lot of snaps for the Colts, but he has holes in his game.
He's a classic. I think because he was a divisional opponent, you remember a lot of the big plays that he's made, because he does make spectacular plays. He's very athletic. He's very aggressive. A lot of his bigger plays are in the run game. In terms of being a complete and total linebacker, he's still a bit unfinished, because he was a special teams guy for his first few years before he worked his way into a starting role. So, no, you shouldn't be surprised that he's making plays. The big question is just, all right, does he become more of a complete linebacker? Mm-hmm. And they're going to use him this year. Like, his playmaking ability is obvious. Does he become more of a full-time guy? Is he a guy that they use situationally? However they use him, he's going to make an impact. Dude, it's just what is his complete and total upside?
Some of these rooms, man, the decisions. I mean, Jamal Hill had a good game on Saturday. And he might not make the team. You know, like, it's that there's already five or six linebackers that are really that are serviceable on this team.
You looked at some of those guys and how they contribute on special teams. Neiman, the linebacker, was signed as a guy
for that.
He's only been a special teams guy. But he made some good plays at linebacker. You know, Chris Hansen, they love Chris Hansen.
There are a lot of guys.
Chris Hansen was a college teammate of mine. So there's a lot of guys out there that they like, but special teams might be the deciding factor.
Might be. All right, losers for this game. I got three winners, three losers, and Blake Fisher just needs to step it up. There's just no two ways about it. If you buy into PFF scores, once again, if I'm going to give out the ones at the front end of it, like EJ Speed at 92.1, it's a scale of 0 to 100. Blake Fisher was the worst player on the team over the weekend. He was 29.3 in the run blocking grade and a 32.8 in pass blocking. That is putrid.
It meets the eyeball test, whatever the PFF grade was. And I don't know if he was dealing with an injury in the offseason or something, but he just... athletically in training camp, he doesn't look strong. He did not. A lot of these other offensive linemen, I think, are playing with better technique. I don't really see evidence of it with Blake Fisher improving over last year. I think George Karlaftis might have broken him, Sean.
Yeah.
I think Blake Fisher got George Karlaftis paid. That was Karlaftis' big performance before the Super Bowl was that. Yep. And I don't know what to make of it right now. Juice Scruggs did some good things in the game, but he didn't look good at the second level. The former second round offensive lineman right now, I don't feel awesome about them.
Yeah. To me, the two biggest signs that Blake Fisher is fighting for his life here are, one, to my recollection, Seth, I don't think he's taken one snap with C.J. Stroud in the preseason, like in any of the padded practices or anything. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong on that, but if he has, it is sparse. The other thing is he was playing in this game until late in the third quarter. Like, Ariante Irsery was one and done as far as series go, and he's a rookie. Blake Fisher's still in there with the twos and the threes at the end of the third quarter of this thing.
I don't know. I was watching an offensive line drill during training camp in West Virginia, and it's a relatively basic drill where he's just drive blocking versus a guy with a pad, and his feet were just narrow, just high school stuff. I don't know.
Loser number two, Graham Mertz, three interceptions in the fourth quarter in his debut. And I guess as I go back and think about them, Seth, because you gave Davis a bit of a pass for the overthrow against or with Cade Stover at the goal line and the Dalton Schultz play in practice with CJ. I don't. The first interception, it looked like Xavier Johnson was in the area, like he kind of threw behind him. I don't know, you know, like that. The second one, he just looked like he sailed it, like there was nobody near. And then the third one was a tipped ball that got intercepted. Either way, regardless of how you come by them, three interceptions in one quarter, you will wind up on the losers list for that game. Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I think people have asked over and over again, and understandably so, why did you draft him anyway?
Why'd you use a six-round pick on Graham Mertz?
And I think a lot of it was he was coming off of an injury last year, and I think Caserio just simply at that point in the draft felt like, well, there's upside here. And if you go back to New England when Tom Brady was there, The Patriots tended to draft a quarterback just about every other year.
Yeah.
They're going to keep drafting quarterbacks. So whatever they liked about, I'm not going to, in terms of splitting hairs when it comes down to which quarterback you draft in the sixth or seventh round, good luck. But the philosophy of drafting a quarterback or using a pick on a quarterback, it's a sixth round pick. Casario thinks there's upside there, and he's probably going to draft a quarterback about once every other year with the Texans because it's the most valuable position in sports. And when you happen to get a lucky roll of the dice, then it can mean good things for your team.
Yep. Last one, third loser. The production, the KTRK, the Channel 13 elements of the production. And let me be very clear: I'm not talking about any of the actual voices on there. I enjoyed Kevin Kugler and John Harris and Andy Kalu. I love those guys. I think they did a great job on the game. I thought Shelby Coppedge did a good job on sidelines. She got handed kind of a, like if there were a sideline reporter Olympics, this would probably be an event. Like, hey, you got handed the quarterback for a sideline interview, but A, he's not paying attention half the time because he's watching the offense.
Because he's actually paying attention to the team. Yeah, I love that.
To the team. Then they go to commercial in the middle of the, like, she gets like two questions in with CJ, and then they're going to commercial. So she's like, well, we'll do more when we come back. They come back from commercial. They're like, okay, now Shelby is going to interview Jalen Petrie while the offense is on the field or while the defense is on the field. When the offense is on the field for the Texans, she's going to interview Jalen Petrie. And once the defense is back out there, she'll interview CJ. She doesn't even get to Jalen Petrie, and all of a sudden, I think Graham Mertz threw one of his interceptions, and the defense is right back on the field.
Yeah.
So she can't interview CJ, so she goes to she's talking to Petrie, and then CJ just never showed up again. I felt bad for Shelby Coppedge, but I thought she did a great job with it. Here's my issue. Here's my glitch with the production. Whoever was running the down and distance in the first quarter was either had vertigo or was drunk. Like, they were putting up second and 11 when it's first and 10. It's a short yardage, and they've got it as long yard. Like, I'm like, did I just miss that? Did I miss a play? I've been watching this game. That was number one. Number two, when they had that review of the touchdown that Minnesota scored that got overturned, they scored on the very next play. But they were... Instead of showing the replay of the play that was being reviewed, they just showed the referee staring into that little box the whole time. I'm like, can we see the play? I don't care to look at the guy who's reviewing it. I want to see the play he is reviewing. So these are the little things that you get it's a local NFL broadcast as opposed to...
That's like Harry Houdini's showmanship back in the day.
Okay.
Heck, when people were really dumb, they weren't skeptical enough. They would put him in a water tank, and then they would close the curtain, and then the curtain would be closed for 5 minutes. and then they would open the curtain, and he'd get out. Yeah, like, oh, what could have been going on behind the curtain? I don't know. I thought he was drowning. I didn't think anything else.
Okay.
I'm kind of glad that the interviews went the way they did.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of other Texans fans loved that CJ stopped pretty much mid-sentence in the middle of an answer because a play was about to be run.
It was kind
of
cool.
A lot of people being interviewed in baseball booths could take a hint, all right? Just shut your yap every now and then when there's a home run or something a big play in the field being executed. Just shut your damn yap.
That's true.
I don't want to hear about the upcoming bobbleheads.
Yeah. It was funny. Like, CJ's attention span, I love that he was, still – kind of looking back out there at stuff going on. So those are the it was hard to find losers for the game. I wasn't going to dig into the third string defense allowing a bunch of stuff in what would in an NFL game be garbage time. But there you go, three winners and three losers. All right, you ready to acknowledge some people, Seth C. Payne?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. We do it every Monday at about this time, 7:20 ish. We acknowledge the big performances from over the weekend. Across all sports, not just Texans. In fact, those are the extent of the Texans acknowledgments that we just did there. This will be all Astros and other stuff here that we're going to get to. Let's start with Carlos Correa. We welcome him home tonight. In the meantime, he's already played in 9 games for the Astros. And if you're a Twins fan and you're tracking Carlos Correa, then I would imagine you're a little upset that he decided that it would be, once he got back with the Astros, to start to have a .405 batting average, a 1098 OPS, couple of home runs. And Seth, he had a play yesterday. Like, the hitting stats are great. I don't expect Carlos to stay in this neighborhood when it comes to being a hitter. I do expect him to be a viable middle-of-the-order bat when the postseason rolls around. But when Jason Alexander got into trouble in the sixth inning, where he started giving up some hits, he had no hit them through. In fact, let's acknowledge Jason Alexander while we're at it. 5 no-hit innings, 6 innings pitched, 1 hit, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. The double play that they turned to close out the sixth, where Carlos moved to his left and was, had to throw the ball, I can't remember if he was moving to his left or right. I just knew he had to throw the ball to second base from a very contorted body position and threw a missile to second, and they get the double play to end the inning. And I'm like, that is why you trade a single-A reliever to the Twins for Carlos Correa and let the poverty Twins pick up $33 million of the tab. That's why you do it, for plays like that, to keep the Yankees at bay in a game where they if that's a base hit, all of a sudden a couple runs are scoring, and we're singing a different tune down the stretch in this game.
Yeah, let's acknowledge the Twins for paying for that production too.
Yeah, that was nice of them to do. That was very nice. Appreciate that. Jose Altuve, he was great again this weekend. He's been great against the Yankees. My favorite was on Friday. Shout out to Tyler Milner for pulling this highlight that we saw in our email on Friday night. This is the Yankee broadcast where they were in the midst of not being able to turn the page for the umpteenth year in a row. They're talking about the sign-stealing scandal, and Altuve interrupts them in classic Altuve fashion.
And they have that whole scandal on top of it all. But Jose Altuve will always remember New York. And this one into the left field corner is gone.
Man, you don't want to wake up a sleeping giant. And he lives for these type of moments.
Who's your daddy now? Should I say the Astros?
That's right. He ain't sleeping, man. Sleeping giant.
Sleeping giant.
Sleeping giant. He had the best batting average in baseball in July, you idiot.
Wake up a sleeping giant.
Whatever.
I love the dynamic of Yankees fans urging other Yankees fans to stop booing Altuve.
Because
it's funny. There is, honestly, when you're on the road, it's fun to get booed. You do. If you feel you get to play the heel in WWE. Mm-hmm. It's nice. Now, Altuve he's probably not wired as much like other guys who might really enjoy being booed on the road.
Yeah.
But it doesn't affect you the way you think it's going to affect anybody. No. Nobody on the road expects, like, oh, I can't believe they're not cheering for me.
Right.
Why wouldn't they be cheering for me?
Right.
So getting booed on the road feels as good as getting cheered at home.
Yeah.
The only time booing affects an athlete is when you're booed at home.
Yep.
That's where you're like, oh, what the hell?
Yeah.
I thought you were my friend.
That's mean.
What about all of this literally love me stuff? What happened to that?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes, keep booing him.
Yeah.
It's not going to do any harm. If anything, it gives you a little bit of boost, especially when you've got a proven track record of shutting up the boos.
No, I love
it. Correa didn't get booed after that first home run on Friday, I think specifically because of that.
Yep. How about this one? I'm going to give the rare second acknowledgement to Jose Altuve. Courtesy of Chandler Rome, Jose Altuve hit his 250th career home run in the first inning. So his home run on Sunday was his 250th of his career. He needs one more double for 450. When he hits that double, he will be the 11th player in Major League Baseball history with 250 home runs, 300 stolen bases, and 450 doubles. That list includes 3 former Astros, Bobby Abreu, Craig Biggio, and Carlos Beltran. They are 3 of the 11 on that list right now. 3 of the 10 currently. Altuve will be the 11th when he hits a double tonight against the Red Sox.
And, Altuve is probably already a Hall of Famer if you retired after this season. But cementing it, especially given, various things that might keep people from voting him in the first ballot or whatever. I think the performances against the Yankees are especially helpful because they tend to just be higher profile, more viewed. It's often in the ALCS, which is nice. So Altuve would never do this, but it would be nice of him in a Hall of Fame induction ceremony to tip his cap to the Yankees for helping him get there.
If he were the classic WWE heel, he would do that. But to your point, he doesn't have the personality traits.
Right,
of a WWE heel.
He would never do that.
He would never.
If anything, it would be a genuine acknowledgement of him crediting his opponents for making him work that much harder.
Yeah. Does he have just one?
Come on, Altuve.
Does he have
get just together.
Just one little sentence in him about the Yankees for a Hall of Fame speech. That's
just a little
all.
Bit of snark, man.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Hey, Quir, real quick, just to close the book.
Oh, go ahead.
On the Astros this weekend, Astros bullpen on Friday came in and cleaned up the mess for Hunter Brown. And Hunter was decent. 5 1/3, gave up 2 runs, left the game tied 2-2. Bennett Souza, who's been a little up and down of late, he was not good yesterday. They had to take him out yesterday. But the bullpen got you 4 2/3 shutout innings, no earned runs. Not shutout innings, because Hader gave up that run in the 10th, but those aren't earned runs because of the ghost runner. But no earned runs over 4 2/3 innings. Souza in particular stranded those two runners, gave you another inning, a couple of strikeouts. So I'm acknowledging the bullpen. We haven't acknowledged the bullpen in a while. They haven't been as dominant as they were early in the year, but they still pretty damn good, and they were pretty good this weekend in that instance. All right, Cam Little, kicker for the Jags, kicked a 70-yard field goal. He's a rookie kicker out of Arkansas. In the preseason game they played this weekend, I think against the Steelers, I'm pretty sure. Here's what it sounded like. Cam Little, this is what a 70-yard field goal sounds like.
He drilled the ball.
Holy smokes. They got a shot.
He just kicked a 70-yard field goal. Are you kidding me?
Crazy.
I've never seen that. The NFL record. That would be an NFL record.
This is the end of the first half. Holy smokes.
That's unbelievable.
Okay, that is the holy smokes is Bucky Brooks. I know that. I'm not sure who the play-by-play guy is for the Jags preseason games.
I think it's Frank Frangie.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's that was a TV feed. So that was
that's the radio guy. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know who it is.
Yeah, so either way, it's courtesy of Jacksonville's local broadcast for their preseason game. But yeah, hey, Magnificent Gladstone, while you're sitting here touting how Travis Hunter is going to change the game. By the way, Travis Hunter played 18 snaps in that game, missed a tackle on defense, had a couple catches for 9 yards on offense, didn't do much. I'm not saying that as shade. I'm just giving it out as information. Your kicker might be the one that transforms the game. You might be the first team to start attempting field goals in your own territory because of this this Cam Little.
They're redefining expectations.
Yes.
And they're redefining paradigms, whatever they want to. They're revolutionizing the game football is what they're doing. But not just football, life in general, everybody.
You are keeping, for those who don't know, Seth is keeping track in his Gladstone glossary on our rundown, of the Gladstone terms. We haven't peeked our heads in on a Gladstone presser in a while, but this mode of operation and singular touch point of Cam Little is absolutely intangibly rich to me, Seth.
Oh, Brian Sexton is the TV announcer. Okay. I know Brian very well. Okay. I love Brian, yes.
He's good.
I'm just glad that he gets to live in an era when he gets to cover kicks like this.
Oh, my God. The things he's
going to witness. There's nothing more exciting. Sure, you might have questions about your quarterback.
Right.
Sure. You're not sure if your head coach is actually a 13-year-old. You don't know any of these things yet.
Yep.
You don't know if Travis Hunter is actually going to have his body completely intact by week 3 because they want to play him 120 snaps a game. But you have a kicker who can go boom.
70 yards. 70 mm-hmm. yards in his sleep, man. I love that you chose week 3 because that's when the Texans play the Jags. That's an interesting question. Like, is Travis Hunter, by the time they play the Texans in week 3, still going to be playing both ways with any sort of significant role?
He played both ways in this game.
He did.
How many total snaps did he have?
18 total snaps.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's going to play more in the regular season.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I had to guess.
The way they're talking.
Yep.
I wonder if there's going to be odds on that. Total number of snaps played by Travis Hunter.
There'll be odds on it. It'll be on Prize Picks and all the daily fantasy stuff. I guarantee you it will be 100%. Let's cross over into a little bit of history here. Jim Lovell, of course, the astronaut, the famous astronaut from Apollo 13, played by Tom Hanks in the feature film, passed away this weekend in Lake Forest, Illinois, at the age of 97, but this is obviously a Houston-related story because of the NASA ties to it. And, of course, it's interesting. The film Apollo 13 would tell you that that it was Jim Lovell who first said this.
What did you do?
Nothing. I stirred the tanks.
Whoa.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Houston, we have a problem.
All right.
Yeah.
So that was Tom Hanks. Now,
Never heard that before.
Yeah.
I've certainly never heard it 879,000 times.
This is an acknowledgement of Jim Lovell. I'm not going to blame him for starting a lame meme or cliche. The truth is, you probably already knew this, Seth, but I Googled it yesterday because I knew there was a bit of a glitch with it. It was actually Jack Swigert, played by Kevin Bacon, who first said, "Houston, we've had a problem." They didn't hear him the first time, and then Jim Lovell said, "Houston, we have a problem."
Yeah.
Yeah.
We discussed this a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you and I did?
Maybe you were out.
I might have been out.
We discussed it.
I don't remember discussing it, yeah.
And it was, ultimately, that whole story about Houston, we've had a problem becomes, a great moment in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Because what'd you do? You figured out a way to, with a bunch of guys in mission control, threw some scraps of stuff on the table and helped talk them through how to calculate this stuff with a slide rule up in a capsule, and they got home safely. Yeah,
while battling pneumonia because the heater went out too. Yeah,
every time some jackass says Houston, we have a problem, misquoting those astronauts in a dicey situation, I'm like, yeah, cool, bring it on. Yeah, that's what Houston did. They figured it out.
We solved problems. Hey, did you want to wish Marv Levy a happy birthday, too?
100th birthday. 100th birthday.
Yeah, dude. Give him two, Ben. Give him two acknowledgments. One for each 50 years he's been on the planet. 100 years old.
Just everybody, let go of the hatred over a potential, maybe how you feel about a playoff comeback or something back in the day.
Yeah.
The guy in a lot of ways, there's a lot of the D'Amico Ryans in him, kind of operating in a different, didn't quite buy into all of the machismo and everything about being a head football coach.
Yeah.
D'Amico does it with a lot more energy and a lot more verve, I think, than Marv Levy did, but they're kind of wired similarly.
So by my calculations, then, if he just turned 100, that playoff game was in 1993 where the Bills came back against the Oilers. That's 32 years ago. And I know it's his birthday. I know it's August and that was January, whatever. But roughly 32 years ago is when that game took place, which means he was in his late 60s at that time. I don't want to throw shade when we're acknowledging somebody for making it to 100. Marv Levy looked older than 68 years old in those years he was coaching the Bills. He looked like he was 80 years old. He probably still looks the same at 100. They always say with some guys, like, that guy always looks like he's 35. I think Marv Levy is the human being that always looks like he's 80. You know, he's looked like he was 80 when he was 50. Probably looks like he's 80 when he just turned 100.
People are aging a lot differently now, though, too.
That's my point.
Because people are just, usually a lot of people that age well are also doing more of an exercise regimen.
Totally, dude.
And what have you.
Yes, yeah.
So he, but I think he was still working in the Bills front office until he was into his 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a productive later stage of life.
He's a great one, man. Marv Levy. Hey, can I do a quick acknowledgement for the station? Because I wasn't here to bask in the afterglow of our Marconi nomination on Friday.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you weren't there. Yeah.
I wasn't here. I just basked on social media instead. Acknowledging Sports Radio 610. If you haven't heard, maybe you were out traveling and you didn't listen on Friday. Nominated for a Marconi Award for Station of the Year. We're finalists along with WIP in Philadelphia, The Ticket in Detroit, the Sports Hub in Boston. All of those are former winners of this thing.
Yeah.
And then 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, who if we lose to, Seth is going to lose his mind, I'm guessing.
I don't know. If we lose to a bunch of inbred hicks who can barely spell their own names, I don't know if I'll get over that one.
Yeah.
It's nice to be nominated, but ultimately you just want to not lose to the Tennessee, Tennessee station.
That's it. It's like the AFC South. That's what it is. Congrats to everybody up here. It is a group effort, 100%. And, we are thankful for all of you, the listeners and sponsors and everybody else who made that possible. It's a huge honor. First Houston sports station, I believe. I know it's the first time our station's been nominated for it. So it's a big deal. So we're very thankful for that. All right. Those are the acknowledgments for this Monday. A lot of good stuff there. All right. Let's circle over a couple stories from week one of the NFL preseason I want to get to. Trust me, nothing heavy or schematic, but we've got to get to a couple of these. As we get out, top of the hour, Mark Vandermeer and John Harris will take over with some Texans talk on Texans radio for a couple hours. And then In the Loop, The Drive, Area 45. Happy to be back in on a Monday here on Sports Radio 610.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
And Seth and I have fun conversations during the break, and we were talking about kind of like poverty ways we used to try to generate money in college so we could buy beer and things like that. I used to sell my books. Oh, God, my dad listens to the show. I used to sell, like, the books that you could get a lot back for at the bookstore, the hardbound books.
Yeah.
I would sell those halfway through the semester sometimes. You get 50, 60 bucks for those.
Because you would read ahead, right?
Yeah.
You
had read ahead. I photocopied every page.
Had everything you needed to know, yeah.
No,
the biggest one for me was when I was a junior, a couple of the seniors on the football team, good dudes. But not as good as I thought they were. Awesome dudes. And you can say whatever you want about Ivy League schools or whatever. On the football team, at least, we had a lot of guys that were on Pell Grants and kind of grew up working their butts off and everything, like blue collar guys.
Yep.
And so one of my friends who was always, he was working, like going to school, working a job, playing football. And he and another friend of mine said, "Hey, Seth, we're gonna clue you in on something that's been passed down year to year, and it's a really good and easy money making scheme that you can take over when we're gone." So apparently, seniors had been passing this down to a select junior or two for years, and I was like, "Okay, cool. What is it?" He's like, "All right, well, here's the thing. You gotta meet us at 5:30 a.m. on Sunday." And out front of their fraternity. I'm like, "All right, cool. I can do that." And I jump in their car, in their pickup, and this was the money-making scheme, was going around to all the fraternities that had parties the night before.
Oh, no.
And grabbing the empty kegs.
The deposit?
Going to take them back for the deposit,
oh,
yes.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, I didn't want to seem ungrateful, but I don't have that in me. I'd love to say it's morality, but maybe more so it's more that I'm chicken. I don't know. I kind of politely sat there really nervous, dude. I'm not good at breaking the law. I am not good at, no. And I just kind of sweated out for a couple hours while they executed their scheme.
Okay, I have three things here. A, that's phenomenal. B, how much did you get for each keg?
I can't remember. It had to have been, I'm just trying to adjust for inflation.
So this is back in like 1995, 96 in that range.
I bet it was $20.
Wow, that's pretty good.
And they got like eight kegs.
Yeah.
Like they didn't go to a lot of places. There was the Cornell fraternities are huge because they don't have any dorms for non-freshmen. So they're like, they have big parties. And so it was easy.
Okay.
And I couldn't do it. I passed it off to somebody else.
You did?
Else.
Okay, because that was my third question. At that point, you were a junior, they were seniors. Did you have any inkling that you would become a potential NFL draft pick at that point? Because this would have been a very silly crime to jeopardize your future NFL career if you had already gotten some sort of feedback that, hey, I might be a draft pick next year.
If I'd gotten
yeah, let's go steal some kegs for $20 a piece.
Plus at Cornell, it's easy to bully the other students too. There's almost an element of like, you got two big football players show up.
Right?
There could be three guys having breakfast, and you'd be like, hey, we're taking your kids.
Okay. Just don't take me.
Have fun with your engineering degree and out-earning me.
That's hilarious.
I couldn't. No, dude, I was sweating so hard. Yeah. I was so uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah.
But I respected these guys. They were my elders. And I just, no, there was not a chance in hell I was ever going to do it, whether I had an NFL career or not.
Yeah, no, you're a good person. That's why.
They weren't bad guys. They were just a little mischievousness.
Yeah, but you're a good person, though.
They had convinced themselves that they deserved that keg money more than those rich kids did.
Did you?
It was the rich fraternities that they would steal from.
Oh,
Sean.
Okay. You're like basically Robin Hood at that point.
And then they probably donated it to a good cause.
I'm sure. Yeah. Did you see the Tom Brady statue this weekend?
I did.
I did. Did the head look a little small to you like it did to me?
The first picture, yeah, it looked like from one of those movies where there's cannibals who shrink the heads of their enemies.
Yes,
all the,
yes.
I think that guy in Beetlejuice is what it looked like.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, let me try to find some other angles of this. Because the picture that was really circulating, it looked like Tom Brady had a tiny, tiny head.
Yeah.
I don't think his head was as... I think that was more because of the vantage point of the photographer.
The angle, yeah.
Yeah, I looked at other angles and the head wasn't, the head looked proportional.
Okay.
The problem was, it just wasn't that flattering of a statue in general.
No.
Tom Brady isn't built like a rock or anything, but when they tried to make him out of rock, he somehow looked even less made out of rock.
I thought it looked like they screwed the head of a 13-year-old onto the body of like a defensive lineman from the Raiders in like 1970.
They started lifting weights.
Yeah, like a big guy. A big dude with a blob body. They should have just stuck a cigarette in his mouth and gotten it over with, you know?
It's one of the greatest, you know, we have Dan Pastorina to thank for this to a certain degree. It's the flak jacket.
Yeah.
The flak jacket, it's hard to, even if Cam Newton, even if you got a body like Cam Newton, when you take it out of context and get rid of all of the coloring of the uniform and everything else like that, it just kind of looks like a frumpy bod.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And that's where Brady didn't have an awesome body or anything, but he didn't look frumpy like that statue looked.
If he wants to talk about the TB12 program, he can't show that statue to anybody. Like, oh, really? You were a really good football player? Oh, did they build a statue for you? Why, yes, here it is. Okay, that's the body I'm going to get if I do this TB12 program you gave me here?
I would have given the artist artistic license to eliminate the flak jacket.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just get rid of that. Whatever the sculpting version is of Photoshop.
Shred him up, man.
Sculpt shop that.
Sculpt shop. All right. Here was Tom Brady. Did a little speech. They unveiled it at the Patriots game against the Commanders, the preseason game. Maybe we'll play this for the Pettycast again tomorrow, but let's play it here. A little joke about Jets fans.
But in the end, this statue isn't just for Pats fans. It'll also give all the Jets fans something to throw their beers at as they leave the stadium every year. Probably in the second quarter. Maybe the third.
All right. Okay, I know Tom Brady dominated the Jets. Here's the thing, Tom. I don't know if you've been paying attention to your team since you left.
Uh-huh.
Y'all pick very high in the draft these days. You picked third 2 years ago. You picked fourth this past year. You're not much better, if better at all, than the Jets right now.
Right.
You know, you are talking trash on behalf of the 2025 New England Patriots, not the 2014 New England Patriots.
Those Jets versus Patriots battles this year, I'm kind of looking forward to, though, because they got a couple of head coaches that are – old school type of coach, like
be fun.
Dudes. Yeah. Vrabel and Aaron Glenn are no nonsense. They are just hardcore. I think there are going to be some bloody battles. They might be defensive battles more so than anything else compared to back in the day.
Indeed. All right, Seth, we're done. Antibodies to you. We're back for 4 hours tomorrow, my friend.
Antibodies to you. And if I ever commission a sculpture, I will be sure that they are not anatomically correct.
Yes, please. Yeah. If it's mine. Yeah, dude. Yeah.
I'll make them very inaccurate. You'll have, yes.
Give me some traps.
I'll make
delts.
You look like Zach Thomas.
Oh, be beautiful. Yeah. Be beautiful. All right, we're done.
Zach Thomas, the linebacker, not the offensive guard, offensive lineman for the Texans.
Not the offensive lineman fumbling around for the Texans.
Yeah.
All right, we're done. We're out of time. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris are up next.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.